part two of Cosmophilia, your 2015 reading, audio portion here. Treading the wheel in reverse. This is the third sign that I'm doing. Began with Aries, then to Pisces, then to Aquarius, and onward back to Taurus. This is the Alice A. Bailey method of treading the wheel backwards so that we tap into the information on the soul level. Not sure if that actually is true per se, but seems like the thing to do, and it's the thing I do with the annual, and it's kind of fun. And it is a whole different feeling than taking the zodiac wheel in the normal order. I can't quite describe it. It's not exactly like playing a record backwards, but it is, I think, easier to read the signs that are late in the zodiac. For some reason, this is maybe a personal bias, and that would be like, say, Sagittarius through Pisces. And it's always a little challenging starting with the early signs without having the foundation laid, though I do write most of my regular sun sign horoscopes in that order. In any event, continuing with your ideas here. Now, this kind of concept that I'm about to introduce is under the general heading of as within, so without, that the inner world is some kind of a reflection of the outer world. And then I'm going to kind of point out a possible exception to that rule. So one of the houses I want to start with, I'm going to do things of a relational nature in this section. In part one, I spoke mainly of inner material and the inner, you know, your kind of inward trajectory. And all the houses I want to cover in this segment of the reading are what you would call relational houses. 11th house, the group, 5th house, collaboration and play, sex, art, and then 7th and 8th, the more conventionally recognized relationship houses. Let's start with the 11th house, which in your solar chart is Sagittarius, and if you're Aquarius rising, your whole sign 11th is Sag, so all of Sag counts for your 11th whole sign house system. And again, you can, let's pretend you're Aquarius rising and you have some of Sag as your 11th. In this method, you can kind of give the chart a what if type of reading. Oh, what if it was true? Your 11th cusp may go through Scorpio. That is possible. And you don't have that's a little bit of the 11th in Sag. And even then, you can read all of Sag on the what-if basis. Worth experimenting with this. There's an awesome monograph by Rob Hand called Whole Sign Houses, an ancient method in modern application. Really one of the best astrology books around. Anyway, 11th house is two main things. It is your group associations, and it is your revenue from business. And so you have Sagittarius on this house. And what is going on in the planets right now is a somewhat hilarious alignment in Sagittarius. I say hilarious because it's kind of like reading someone's resume that's so thick you could trip over it if you put it on the floor. And the grouping of planets in Sagittarius is so, it's piled so high that it actually goes above the clouds. And it, on the day of the Aquarius new moon, the day that we're reading here, the collection, well, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19 planets in Sagittarius. And hey, Sagittarius is the sign on your house that involves groups, and you've got a fucking mob scene going on. And it may be confusing. And as I have joked in other places, the collection of planets in Sagittarius makes the tavern scene in Star Wars look like it's struggling for diversity. The kinds of different planets the number of different planets, the various speeds at which they move. These include asteroids, major planets, deep space points, centaur planets like Chiron, pretend planets like Cupido, and then Ixion, a Pluto-like planet. I'm trying to think if there's any QB1. Quaoar, of course, a planet on the realm right beyond Pluto. Lots of different kinds of things. Lots of diversity. You do like it weird. There's a lot of weird people that you can play with. And there's also a collection of basically people in your life and around you in various contexts, whether it's in the city you live in or groups you belong to in some way, things you like to do, people that you hang out with, where if you relate to people in a sincere way, there's no way for you to get stuck in any one self-concept. You have to adapt to each one of these people, and that is keeping you on your toes. That is keeping you in touch with your own individuality. And I would suggest, if you haven't embarked on this, get to know the people around you. Sounds like a silly thing to say, not such a silly thing to say. For example, you might live in New York City, where it's possible to not really get to know so many people around you. You might live in a faraway rural area, like in the Pea Patch or Kodiak Island, and there's not that many people around you. But there will be if you look for them. And there is the possibility for incredible profit, benefit to come into your life from association with people. Now, the problem with this is that it's also been a bit chaotic and confusing. And the 11th house is a very meaningful house when it comes to searching for one's sense of purpose, when it comes to finding an understanding of where you orient in reality. And Aquarius has this theme built in, being the sign of groups and conformity. At the same time, it's the sign really of the most radical individuality. And it has both things, kind of like a drawing that's a kind of one of those figure background type drawings where you can't tell if it's a vase or two people looking at one another. And actually, it's both, but it depends on how you look at it, what you focus on, the figure or the background. And if we look at the figure of Aquarius, we see a very independent person who stands away from the group. If we look at the background of Aquarius, we see the sign of groups, where you are and must be part of the group and often in a leadership role. Okay, so this is kind of a wild scene in this house, and this has been going on for a while, by the way. This is not a new thing, but it's a constantly changing thing, and certain planets that have been there for a while are moving out. Certain ones that haven't been there are moving in. And the most important one moving in, as mentioned in the previous section, is Saturn. Now, I think that what Saturn is going to do to this whole kind of wild scene in Sagittarius is provide an organizing principle, a sense of order, a sense of focus. It's going to drop a lens in front of it, and suddenly all of these kind of way out there type of energies, you know, the diversity is really amazing. I mean, I could probably give a two-hour talk on just the planets in Sagittarius, but, you know, for example, they include a point called Aureus, which I believe is a centaur. And this chart showed up, planet showed up prominently in the chart of Nelson Mandela and a number of other social heroes, people we really admire and respect. On the other side of the spectrum, there's Ixion, to which I give the key name, anyone is capable of anything. There is Pholus, a planet in the group of planets that are related to Chiron, with a very different type of action than Chiron. It's kind of like a quick-acting Chiron. Other planets involving deep, extended commitment in relationship, and then one in particular about family ties and the creation myth that you make up based on the family that you were born into. All this is going on in your 11th house, and it is indicative of a kind of a family. I mean, it's the 11th house is, you might think of as the family of humanity as you experience it in a direct way. Not the abstract out there, far out there, what's going on far, far, far away, but as you begin to experience things entering your energy field, that is when they start to take on that very tangible quality of the 11th house. It's basically the place where you do belong. One thing you don't have to worry about is being too weird for this bunch. What is actually true is that you are exactly weird enough, and you possess a level of normalcy that is difficult even for so-called normal people to access. And by normalcy, I mean the ability to participate in society in a way that is integrated and organized. A lot of these characters showing up in Sagittarius right now, it's not their thing. Some of them, it is their thing, but many of them, most of them, it is just not their thing. They are from a whole other dimension of reality, and some of them have absolutely nothing to do with the world itself, except to influence it in very subtle ways. And you enter this picture for the first time in about 26 years, able to call things into focus. Quite a beautiful and an interesting thing. And this changes your leadership role. I mean, if you've been following the Planet Waves monthly horoscope, weekly horoscope, I've been really emphasizing, focusing the role of leadership. This has been associated with the presence of Saturn in your 10th house, and then for a good chunk of the year, Mars moving through your 10th house. That, I guess, was sometime maybe July-ish or so like that, and of 2014. And Saturn entering Sagittarius changes your leadership role from a more formal take-charge type of role to an organizing principle type role, right? Very different thing. It's more of a circular level of leadership. It's more of leadership on the level of kind of like condensing things into a form that can get something done. And so I would propose that you not let go of the concept of leadership if that's something that you've discovered or that you've followed in the sort of philosophical approach to life that I'm taking in astrology, but that your leadership role changes. Your leadership role evolves into a more peer-to-peer role where you possess a certain set of skills that make it possible for you to deal with the world in a way that it's very difficult for most people to deal with the world. You have that certain something. It's possibly an adult streak. It's possibly the ability to understand how systems are organized. There's a number of different ways to conceptualize this. It could certainly be being more mature than you're supposed to be at your certain age, or whatever. Maybe you had older people in your life who taught you things that most people in your age cohort don't know. Whatever the case may be, you have that something, and you're bringing this something to your society, to the society of people who surround you. And there may very well be some project associated with this. And I would suggest if there is a project, that it's a long-term project. We are looking at Saturn leaving Sagittarius in late 2017. That's a while for 2017, is that? Yeah, 2017, correct. It's not 2015 yet. And so keep that in mind. At the very least, the normal, usual, typical patterns of your social relationships as they have been developing over the past 2 years are going to change. It may turn out there's people that you choose to not relate with, people that you choose to relate with only in limited ways, but keep an eye on that. And by the time you're listening to this, Saturn will have been in Sag for a couple of weeks. It enters on, I think, the 23rd of December, 2 weeks prior to my planned publication date. And so that will give you some clues. You know, by New Year's, a little early in the year, you might be noticing that something subtle has shifted and that you are becoming the organizing principle of what is around you, and may develop a kind of lack of patience for immaturity and for kind of nonconformity for its own sake. There should be a good purpose behind nonconformity. It's a powerful tool. Okay, let's shift into the realm of more intimate partnerships. And one thing that I see going on here is, in much the same way that there is a lot of tension around the question of self-esteem and a lot of not knowing, there is a kind of similar tension that exists around a partnership. And my interpretation of this, the impression that I'm getting from this configuration, is that there's a partnership in your life that you are not so sure about. There's things about it that are very good, and there are things about it that you would much rather not have to accommodate. And that reflects an internal self-esteem question. There's something there. And there is a tension between freedom and commitment. And yes, I know that this is one of the age-old issues in relationship, especially as we enter the modern age and people do not expect relationships to last forever, but there's a kind of romanticized mythology that relationships are going to last forever. And that is some tension that you are living with. Mars right now, as I record, Mars is in Aquarius in your sign, and that is pushing your independent streak, perhaps more than it has in quite a while. And it is, I think, pushing the limits of your ability to consider yourself a free person, kind of bumping against a state of commitment in a relationship. And one thing I want to propose to you is that from a sexual standpoint, you might not be monogamous. Now, I don't think there's that many people who are actually monogamous. I think there's more people who were told this is the right way to be and who are trying to live out an idealization of the perfect human relationship, which includes the fact that it's going to last forever and that there'll be partnership on every level, and that maybe there'll be kids and there'll be soulmatehood and partnership and not having a lot of conflict and all that stuff. And a big part of the problem with that model is that it ignores the self-actualization that's required to actually be there. And the other side, I think, of the problem with that model is that it does not factor for change. And they're very closely related, because people continue to self-actualize when they're in relationships, and often the concept of the relationship interferes with the direct experience of self-actualization. You can't become independent and strong in that particular way and that particular relationship and have that relationship work, because if you do, it threatens the relationship. So there's a paradox there. And I think this paradox needs to be fully embraced for what it is. The way in which, for example, commitment and growth can have a kind of an incompatibility, and then the need to be independent versus the need to be with someone have a kind of an incompatibility. And speaking to the possibility of not being monogamous, is a word for that, which is polyamorous, which is a complicated term because it's so many different forms of polyamory, but that's the thing to remember about it, is that it can take many, many different forms, is that at least if you feel like you have this tendency to be at peace with that fact, to at least not lose sleep over the fact that you're not the person who is going to practice someone else's concept of absolutely perfect fidelity for your entire life, or even for any period of time that you yourself have not defined. Now, I don't mean to impose a concept on you that might be true. There are some people who are actually monogamous. I'm just talking about the possibility that you have other interests and that you don't know what to do about those interests because they can conflict with your current relationship or your idea of what a relationship should be. And the way to work with this tension, first of all, is to do so in an honest way. It is to be real. And I think that you will find that through being real, you build trust, and that trust helps build the structure of the relationship. Relationships are made of trust. I think they're made of trust more than they're made of love. Love is a wonderful thing, but love has no ground to stand on if there is not a state of trust. And it is the trust that you want, and the trust comes from being real with people. The other thing that your chart seems to be sort of blaring out and it's kind of subtle because these planets don't show up in most astrology charts, but I'm looking right at them, is the need for a more broad-minded concept of what sex is, of what sex means or might mean, and the terms and conditions of a sexual relationship. What is that really about? What is the, actual underlying nature of a contract, which is an agreement, which is often unspoken in sexual relationships, upon which the relationship is based? What is that agreement? And the notion of having a conscious agreement by itself can be controversial. The mere bringing up of the subject can indicate that the subject has not been brought up, and that the reason that the subject has not been brought up is because it's going to be controversial. If someone is not exactly monogamous, and they know that inherently in their being, which is a sexual orientation, like being bisexual or transgender or heterosexual, it's easier to get by in a relationship without talking about it. And the mere bringing up of the subject makes it open to controversy. I would suggest you go there and that you insist on living your relationships wholly on the ground of truth about who the people actually are, what they've done, what they want, and what they want from one another. And have the agreement be an actual spoken, possibly written in your diary or something, agreement of what is so. And this will take a burden off of you. And the burden it will take off of you is the burden of needing to conform to something that you're not, because you can't do that, not for very long anyway. And I think that one of the reasons why so many relationships fail, or seem to fail, is because they are being conducted between people who are trying to be someone that they're not. And that is just ultimately going to come unraveled. It will be doomed. And the way to undoom that is to start by being who you actually are and by being what you actually are. Now, one other way to interpret the potential for polyamory is to take it a little bit different way, a little bit different twist. And astrology will always have two or three viable interpretations for every aspect. And one of them is that you have two very different sexual and relational natures. One of those natures might be to be more retreating and not wanting to be with anyone. And then the other side of that nature might be you really like to be with someone. Two sides of the sexual nature may very well mean that you have attractions to both men and to women. It may be that you have a more normal sexual side, more say vanilla is the current word, and then a kinkier sexual side. And the question is, can you express both of those sides of your nature in a relationship? And if you can't, what are you doing with the other side? So I would suggest that if you're, you know, in a relationship where that, you know, this kind of energy is expressed, that that's an active question to ask. And if you're between relationships or, you know, looking for the next relationship in some way, that you actively pay attention for people who are willing to accommodate both sides of your nature. This might have a way of obviating the polyamory thing, right? It's a, you know, possible way to vent that energy, which is to associate with someone who is polyvalent themselves, who has many different possibilities and is not just stuck to one side of their nature, one facet of their reality, and therefore can accommodate your ability to be mutable and to want to kind of transform, reinvent yourself, and can accommodate your prevailing curiosity, which is an important thing. And also, here's an important one, people, singular or plural, who like to talk about sex. Gemini on the fifth house is suggesting that one of the best ways that you have sex is to talk about sex. And I would propose that no matter who you are with, whether you're alone, whether you're with someone, whether you're married to, you know, the Prince of Monaco, that you retain the freedom to speak freely about anything you want, to anyone you want. This is such an inherent part of your nature, this ability to be conversant and to not have to be secretive about it. Secrecy is not healthy for you. It's not healthy in general. It's especially unhealthy for you because it can really try your nerves and create a state of stress that is just not comfortable and not kind of advancing of physical or mental health. And so one of the measures of physical or mental health is, are you free to be open with whoever you want to be in conversation? And do the people around you who say they love you accommodate that? And do they accommodate your curiosity? Another very central part of your nature. So I realize here that we get into the paradox of relationships and how, you know, it seems that there never really is the perfect relationship, but there may be the state of mind that makes relationships into something that is, you know, fruitful and beautiful and not frustrating and not requiring you to compromise. That state of mind comes from you. And the bottom line of that state of mind, and I think the bottom line in nearly all questions of relationship does involve self-esteem. And, you know, this aspect of your life is a bit paradoxical on its own, because what I'm proposing, at least in the previous segment, is that you are going to draw a lot of energy and a lot of strength from certain questions that you have about yourself. It's kind of like converting antimatter into matter. It's like answering the riddle by looking right at the riddle. But in any event, I think that we really could call self-esteem a space of honest self-acceptance, and that, above all else, is the one thing that will support you and remind you that you have a right to exist. I think that it is very likely that the prevailing spiritual issue on this planet right now involves self-esteem. And by self-esteem, really, it flips, and there are so many people dealing with self-hatred, so many people dealing with or not dealing with the fact that they just don't like who they are. you are not in a position where you can do that. You may be in a position to withhold judgment. You may be in a position to admit that you don't know or that you are ambivalent, but even that is treading on some thin ice. And I think that it is possible to practice as a devotion, first of all, reversing thoughts of active thoughts of unworthiness and spending some time with this question and recognizing that there actually is no question that you belong who you are. And it can seem all confuddled and confused and mixed up, but the fact is that you exist. You have very little information how you got here, though I think that you have been actively seeking that information and gaining some clues, but I would guess that you have enough to know that you don't know the rest of the story, and so you have to coexist with that not knowing. But the thing that you also must coexist with is the fact that you are in fact here, and that it has an inherent rightness to it. And all of these things are ideas. It is possible to just experiment with the idea that your existence and your being is inherently the right thing and see where that leads you. See where it leads you in terms of what decisions you make and what options that you even see, and look at the ways in which you can move around that filter of self-acceptance as a kind of an optional thing, where you have a choice of what filter to look through and see how the world looks and how the world feels when you change filters. And one of the filters you can certainly look through is doubt. And one of the filters you can look through is acceptance. And one of the ones you can look through is certainty. And because of this extraordinary conjunction going on, there's a lot of them happening right now, but this is really, I think, the gem of 2015 is Chiron conjunct Borsisi in your second house, as I've mentioned here and in other places, that your choice of how you perceive yourself, first of all, is a choice. It is entirely optional. The value that you put on yourself is something that you own, that you write the script for, and that you basically make all the decisions about, and that power of choice is the thing that more than anything determines the reality that you live in. It's kind of a very basic, what you might think of as spiritual lesson, but boy, I mean, the longer I live, the more vividly it is true. And looking at your charts with this Borsisi Chiron conjunction, raising the whole theme of belief in yourself to really the level of art is the thing to watch this year, I think, above all other factors going on. They've been going on for a while, and in a way, this one's been coming into focus for a while. But imagine how beautiful life would be if more people or most people or everyone on the planet loved and accepted themselves for who they are. Imagine being surrounded by people who love and accept themselves. And if you can imagine that, you can imagine how good it would feel to be around you in a state of self-loving acceptance, and what a powerful example that serves. And it is a vector. It moves through the social networks and through society itself, and you are a leader in this by your very existence. So shine that light. Let people see the love in your heart. Let them know what motivates you as you discover what motivates you, and remind yourself what motivates you. And I think that you will find yourself living in an unusual state of harmony and feeling as if you have this surprising sensation of authority in your own life, where decisions that in the past may have seemed impossible now seem like they are just the thing to do. All right. With that, I leave you. If you are Aquarius Sun, please do check out your rising sign. For that, you need at least an approximate time of birth, and then you can look up your rising sign at astro.com and go to that reading. My readings are very strongly oriented on the houses, and so the rising sign is important. If you're looking for information about your professional life and career, I suggest you listen to Scorpio and Sagittarius. And specifically for information about important partnerships, love affair type relationships, check out what is going on over in Leo. Thanks for listening. Thanks for coming in my direction for some information about existence, that thing. And I will catch you on a different day. Bye.